There was a hint in the opening prayer about what the gospel is today, about being bent over with strife or with struggles. This is the story of the woman who was bent over, whom Jesus heals on the Sabbath day, from Luke chapter 13. Now, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over, was quite unable to stand straight up. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, "Woman, you are set free from your ailment." When he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up and began praising God. But the leader of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day." But Jesus answered him, "You hypocrites, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?" And when he said this, all his opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things that he was doing. The Gospel of the Lord. We have once again an insight into Jesus as a Jew, because here he's confronting something that's going on in Judaism that really is a problem. It seems they found a way to relegate God to certain days, that God can only do his work, or God can only be functioning and operating on the days that they require it by their church law. And interesting, that little piece of minutia, if you will, from Judaism has certainly not been a stranger in the whole development of Christianity. Because church became the place for many centuries, the only place where you could be in touch with God, and we were all relegated on our own out there, except that God would be watching in case we made a mistake. But rarely did we ever think that we could ever turn to God out there. But if you wanted to talk with God, you had to come here. And that's a sad thing when you think about it. But Jesus confronts the whole thing and says, you cannot in any way limit the powers of God working with us. Looking for a moment at the woman who was cured, do you ever think about this woman hasn't looked up straight in 18 years? So probably for the first time she's able to look at a friend face to face. Besides seeing the clouds in the sky and all the wonderful things around, she also begins to see what has happened to the world around her. Now she can see the fringes of society and the marginalized people, large, vast numbers in her day, who are living a very difficult life. She can see what's happening to the children. She can see very clearly not only those kinds of things, but also she has perhaps a new vision that allows her to see that perhaps she might have something to offer in their struggle. And I think that's what's behind this gospel story. It's not so much the cure in the Pharisees and the synagogue. It really is about the choice between having God be a part of our lives and accepting grace that allows us to see things from a different perspective, to see, as we say, as God sees things, and to witness not only what is happening, but to participate in such a way that we grace the hurting moment and allow it to become something new for other people. Perfect example of this, I thought, in the Olympics, one of the things that was played over and over and over again were the two women who were running in the 1,000 meter, and one of them tripped, and the other one tripped over the one that fell, and everybody kept on running, and they stopped, and they picked each other up, and they encouraged each other to go. At one point, the one that had really damaged her knee or her ankle wasn't able to hold herself up, and so they hobbled together across the line to make sure they finished the race. And that's been touted on the news as perhaps a wonderful moment of humanity. There's a lot of those human moments that you see in games like the Olympic, not the least of which is, I sat there, I've been reading an article from the New York Times Magazine last week. It was, the whole magazine was really a book of five witnesses from Iraq and Afghanistan, people who have lived in those countries from before the war, during the war, and now where they are today. Fascinating, because I looked at the Olympics through those eyes, and I recognized that a lot of the people who are running for certain countries are immigrants to another country. They live elsewhere, but they were running for their native country. And the immigrant is the part that really struck me. Immigrant means you've moved from one place to another. How many of you have not moved from one place to another in your life? I counted, I've moved about 6 times. So in a way, I'm an immigrant. Why do people move? If you read the articles in the Republican of late about the problems with taxes and the cost of living here in Connecticut, a lot of people have left this state for better jobs and more quality of life elsewhere where it's cheaper. Companies are leaving the state for the very same reason, because there's better profits to be made someplace else. And I know in Madison, where we spent 15 and a half years, a large part of that community is mobile. They come in to work for 3 or 4 years with the company, then they relocate someplace else. There's a lot of mobility in Madison. This whole country is a nation on the move. We are all moving someplace. To use the word immigrant is a very, very special name, because it has taken on a very, very dark context. It's weighed down by something that I guess the Germans call Schadenfreude, which is basically one of us is up and the other one is down. And if I happen to be down, then my goal is to kind of move up. But when I move up, the way I move up is by taking the person up from the top down. So we have this seesaw kind of life. And in a seesaw kind of existence, where even Jesus says, we'll see here today, but you hear it next week especially. By the way, the sermon, the gospel for Rex Sunday is in the bulletin, so make sure you read it so you can participate next week. Jesus says, the rich will be cast down and the poor will be lifted up. The mighty will be thrown from their thrones, and the poor shall be raised to a higher level. That's a seesaw. And when you live with a seesaw kind of vision of life, then everybody becomes somehow a threat to who I am or to my existence or to what I find valuable. In fact, the way we move people up and down is basically we demonize. And that's not such a harsh thing. It's done subtly, so subtly. I mean, evil is evil. We recognize evil, and sometimes judgment has to take place to get rid of the evil. Absolutely. But there are subtle ways of letting evil creep into our lives. For example, in watching the Olympics, I have no vested interest in the Olympics, who wins and who doesn't. Of course, I'm rooting for the United States. But in all the races, I found myself where they weren't even competing, voting for one team over the other. Rooting one because I don't like the politics in the other country. I don't like the way they deal with humanity. I don't like their record on human rights. And so I think they should be punished. Somehow there's got to be judgment. And isn't that what we do, whether it's we're watching the Olympics, or we're listening to a political campaign, or we're talking about a different church, or we're talking about a different way of life, perhaps different from our own, or people who are trying to become themselves and finding themselves labeled in all kinds of ways that we don't always understand. See, it goes on all the time. We do this. It's so normal, it's so natural, it's so cultural, we don't even think about it. What this gospel is talking about, I think, underneath all of it, is very simply found in the woman. The woman who, for the first time in her life, changed her perspective. It was changed for her by, we can call it grace, the act of God, however you want to label it. But her life changed. And her vision changed. Her perspective changed. And as a result of her perspective changing, she found that she heard a call to do something more. She could not sit back and just watch what was happening. She now had to participate because she was freed from one place and brought to another. She was an immigrant. She went from here to there and had a whole new, fresh approach to life. And if, like all the other people Jesus touched and whose lives were changed, she probably followed him for a while and modeled her life after him. And that's what we do. That's why we read this book. That's why we talk about Jesus. I have to ask myself many times in the course of a week how I, as a migrant from one place to another, if I'm growing, I'm migrating, I'm changing. How in the course of a week do I really see that I've changed? And how many times in the course of the week does the old big old ugly show its face again? Because I haven't quite gotten past that one. I just don't understand this. I can't abide this. This is absolutely wrong, etc., etc., etc. This is a perfect example. This gospel is a perfect example of what you and I have grown to understand as God speaking. And I know in my life, I never really listened to what God was saying because I was too busy listening to myself. But when you find yourself stooped over with something, your hearing gets much better. And when you're burdened with something that is overwhelming, again, you are primed to hear something different. We call that hope. And when you do hear it, when I hear it, I am then called to change what I do. The change is within, certainly. But the behavior is what matters. Real healing, if we're talking about the healing of a nation, the healing of the world, the healing of individuals, the healing of the downtrodden, the beaten, the ones who have no hope, the real healing will only take place when somebody standing next to their stooped person takes on a little bit of the suffering and gives that person a vision of what is yet to come. Like the two runners on the track, both laid low. They entered each other's struggle, and together they struggled to the end, and found that they had set an example for the whole world. I know it sounds simple, but it's a very complex, complex issue. And in these times, when we are making decisions about the quality of life for the next generation and generations to come, and when we are trying to make decisions about leadership and the quality of life right here in our own backyards, I think it's something worth listening to. Let us not settle for the yin, the yang, the up and the down. Let us try to be clear about what it is God may be saying to us. Amen.